you know, we're so good in this world about just compartmentalizing everything in our lives. This is when I exercise, this is when I go to church, this is when I go to work, and we don't like the areas mixing up very much. But yeah, that needs to all change with church, because our church needs to come into the home. It needs to be in all areas of our life, into our rhythm. Our daily rhythm is what it needs to be.
What a beautiful thought. The message of Jesus needs to be in our daily rhythm. Today on Come Receive the Light, we will talk about sharing Jesus with young children, and they're never too young to start. Also, how about the Bible and science?
I teach at Lutheran School of Theology, and we have a Zygon Center for Religion and Science. And they asked me actually to chair up that entire center a few years ago. Why? Because I'm Orthodox, and they wanted a traditional approach to the way we look at science and religion discussion. So it's clear that there are many groups out there that are dying to hear what Orthodox have to say, but we're just not there saying it.
Well, if you're a regular listener to Come Receive the Light, you probably already guessed that we are going to say it on today's edition of our broadcast. Welcome to another weekly version of Come Receive the Light, an outreach of OCN, or the Orthodox Christian Network, in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and on the web at myocn.net. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. Well, today we launch a regular monthly series from the Greek Orthodox Center for Family Care. Father Chris will explain a bit more about this new series just a little bit later. We're going to start with a conversation about today's relationship between science and religion. And as always, we look at the topic through the lens of the Orthodox Christian faith.
My guest today is Gail Walachek. She's a professor at Northwestern University in the departments of radiation oncology, radiology, cell, and molecular biology, the Robert E. Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center, and the Feinberg School of Medicine. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here.
You're here today to offer insight as both a woman of faith and an accomplished scientist. So this is going to be a very interesting conversation.
Well, I've been looking forward to it.
Good. I mean, why do you think that there's been tension between scientific and religious community? I mean, why does that exist, in your opinion?
So in my opinion, it's actually not so strong for Orthodox Christians as it is for many of the other faith backgrounds. You know, I also teach at Lutheran School of Theology here in Chicago. I teach science and religion classes. Mm-hmm. And so I've dealt with this interaction between the science and religion. And what I feel happens, particularly in the West, is there's this sort of separation between brain and heart. Mm. And so there's a tendency to put everything in the brain or everything in the heart, and to separate kind of, you know, this scientific approach to things like artistic expression, you know, how we view other people, personality, those sorts of things are seen as being separate disciplines. Whereas I think from the Orthodox tradition, we don't see that much distinction between how we think about things and how we feel. They're meant to be integrated into one whole.
Right. I mean, help me out here, because as I look at it, if God created us, which he did, gave us a reasoning mind, which he did, and we choose to become scientists, dentists, lawyers, whatever we do, I want to think that God's hand is in that. And therefore, there's science and religion, as far as I'm concerned. There's not going to be tension. I mean, there may be discussion, wholesome, good, clean discussion, but there's nothing wrong with that, is there?
Absolutely. I think that that's the beauty of it, actually, is that because we're created as one whole person, mm-hmm. we're meant to have these sorts of dialogues going on within ourselves and with other people. So I think that the tension between science and religion is really made up. I don't think it's real.
Yeah, these compartments that people put everybody into.
Yes, exactly.
With so many things in science, the average person has to just believe that what they're told many times, whether it's about black holes or how electrons function. I mean, how is that trust in the experts different within the scientific world from our religious faith?
Well, it's really very different, because in science, we actually know that things will change. We know that truths will change over time, or what we perceive as being true in one particular period will not be true later. Hmm. That's why we express many things as theories, because science is never really unchanging in that way.
Okay.
But we have truths about God with a capital T that, you know, we actually believe and are established, and those unchanging truths are not something that changes with time. We might change how we approach worship or things like that in small ways, but we certainly don't change what we think about God, what we think about the Trinity, what we think about Jesus Christ as Savior.
Some people, especially now, are a little bit afraid to speak up about the scientific issues that are facing us, stem cell, a lot of things that are out there right now. Number one, because they really don't know what they're talking about. And when you get into these conversations, which are serious conversations, stem cell research, the evolution topics, all these topics that come up, people have a tendency to just, as soon as you say something, you're sort of buttonholed and put in a corner, and you're not able to just, wait a minute, let me explain myself. Will you hear my side of the story? So I guess my question to you is, why is it important for people of faith to speak up both within the scientific community as well as from without?
Well, I think I'd answer that two ways. First of all, let me say why it's important for Orthodox to be part of this discussion, because other groups, other church faiths and faith backgrounds are speaking up themselves. And frankly, Orthodox are really needed in this debate because of this, you know, unity that we have between heart and mind, because of our deep, rich tradition. They actually need us to talk and to explain things. Many of the other faith traditions are lost without a deeper interpretation. So I think Orthodox need to be at this table because in order to enrich the dialogue and the discussion. And I think that we can point the way in many cases to answers that, you know, currently puzzle people, particularly with regard to science and religion. The second reason why I think it's important is because, you know, I think probably 10 years ago I would have said that it is that religion really has very, very little impact on what happens in science. But then what happened was the stem cell discussion came up, and we had the Catholic Church taking strong stands one way. We had different Protestant denominations taking strong stands on either side. We had Jewish tradition taking stands. And the end result of it was that actually the scientific community heard it. And there are types of procedures that were being done in science 10 years ago for stem cells that are no longer being done because science heard that this was not going to be acceptable to religious communities, and therefore they decided to take a step back and rediscover ways that would not be so so difficult for the religious community to accept. So that's an example where religious communities actually had an impact on the science that was done and on the technology that was developed. That's why we need to be really vocal in what we believe.
Okay. And it's also that we bring with it the fullness of our faith, the proper understanding of the scripture as God intended his creation to be. And many times, I think you can agree with me, Gail, many times we are absent from the table of discussion. I mean, I can't tell you how many programs I watch on a weekly basis, talk programs, and they're talking about issues, very important issues. Rarely do you see an Orthodox Christian theologian, layperson, somebody there who says, well, wait a minute, there is another aspect to this, right?
Yeah, and in fact, just as a demonstration of that. So I teach at Lutheran School of Theology, and we have a Zygon Center for Religion and Science.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me actually to chair up that entire center a few years ago. Why? Because I'm Orthodox, and they wanted a traditional approach to the way we look at science and religion discussion. So it's clear that there are many groups out there that are dying to hear what Orthodox have to say, but we're just not there saying it.
Finally, Gail, let me ask you this question. What are the scientific advances that are currently being worked on that you think the Christian community really needs to talk about and learn more about?
Well, certainly I still believe the beginning of life technologies are things we need to be careful about, particularly with stem cells. I think that there are some technologies we could endorse, and there are others we couldn't. We need to keep a really close eye on stem cell technologies, so that's one. A second one that I actually do research on myself is nanotechnology, which is where we work with things that are very, very small. They're so small that they can enter into cells and manipulate them.
Wow.
On the one hand, you can use most technologies for good or for bad. You can go into cells and manipulate them so that you're killing cancer cells or you're eliminating a virus, or you could go in and cause manipulations that might be much more harmful or much more drastic. Those technologies I think we need to keep an eye on. A third one that, you know, worries me a great deal is are these technologies that we use to enhance function. So, you know, so just think for a moment about the drugs that we use for attention deficit disorder, ADD.
Mm-hmm.
Those drugs were developed to help people that had problems with focus and concentration. Well, what's happened is those drugs have moved now into college campuses where students take them, you know, the week before their exam mm-hmm. so that they can be all primed for their exam, and then they stop taking them altogether. So that's, you know, kind of a use where there was originally a good intention, but I'm not sure it's a good idea for students to be taking this to prime for their exam. If you go a step further, there were drugs that were developed for patients with Alzheimer's disease, or at least in mice with Alzheimer's disease, that gave them greater response times. Now, imagine if those drugs are used in Alzheimer's patients, they're going to be very, very helpful. But imagine that they're going to be used in soldiers who are pulling the trigger and firing guns at people. A fast response time there where you don't think about what you're doing first could actually be very dangerous. So I think that those are the types of technologies where they enhance, they're maybe used for disease in the first place, but then they're used later to enhance normal function. Those, I think, are right now at the forefront and things we need to be thinking about.
Gail, it's been a great conversation. Thanks for being with us today. And listeners,
thank you,
hope
Father Chris enjoyed it all.
Thank you very much.
Okay, take care.
You know, as you and I listened to this conversation, it was just that, a conversation, two people interacting on the subject. And we'd love to have that kind of dialogue with you. What do you think about what you just heard? If you'll go to our website at myocn.net and click on the Listen button and select CRTL, Come Receive the Light, there is a link associated with this broadcast that simply says comment. Click on that and then share your feedback. Again, that's myocn.net. And now with our feature conversation, here again is our host, Father Chris.
It's a pleasure to welcome Melissa Tsongranis of the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese Center for Family Care. She's here with me as part of the center's ongoing partnership with OCN, where we welcome a speaker from their office on the third weekend of each month. Today, Melissa is speaking with us about spiritual development in the first 3 or 4 years of life, a time, frankly, which is often overlooked. Great to have you here with us, Melissa.
It's great to be here, Father Chris.
You know, a lot of people talk about spiritual development in the infant, the toddler age. But what's so important that we've not overlooked these years in our children's life?
Well, you know, Father Chris, honestly, at no other period in a person's life does more development occur than those first, you know, 5 years of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the brain itself, it's tremendous what it goes through. You know, the brain experiences more growth, you know, and creates more neural pathways, you know, from birth to five than it will during the rest of the person's life collectively. And, you know, as our brain's building pathways during those early years and our children are laying the pathways and the neurons are connecting, it just makes sense
mm-hmm.
to build these pathways and connections to God. And we wire our children to Christ by introducing them to the church and to God from the very moment they're born. You know, Bishop Irenaeus says, one can make what one wants of a small child. His soul's like soft wax.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it can receive the imprint of God's image as easily as that of the devil. So our children at a very young age need to have Christ imprinted upon their hearts.
Yeah, part of the issue, I think, for us as Orthodox Christians is we use the senses as windows into the soul. I think it was St. Seraphim who said that. So it's a matter of making that imprint, as you say, on the soul. When the child is young, he comes in to the church, he can hear everything, he can see things. And the imprint is there. I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
One of our staff members told me recently about the first time that her son pretended to brush his teeth, she told me. And she said it was sort of eye-opening for her because she had never intentionally demonstrated how to brush her teeth for him. What else was he learning that she wasn't intentionally teaching? So it seems like the best way to teach our children about faith at this young age is to be visibly and frequently engaged in our own faith, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Father. You know, children are little sponges. They learn what they see, and that means the good and the bad. You know, and sometimes we don't even realize what we're teaching them. I remember a friend told me once that, you know, her son used the word stupid, and she went over and said, you know, well, we don't use that word in this house. And her son said, well, maybe you shouldn't use it, Mommy. And she stopped and thought for a minute, and she's like, I don't call my children stupid. Where did he get that? And she realized that, you know, when she was frustrated with a computer or something, or, you know, around the house, she was like, stupid computer, or stupid, right, you know, this and that. Right. And he had heard that and was picking up on that. Mm-hmm. So they hear things that we don't realize we're teaching. And if they see, you know, that the church and God is not a priority in our life, they'll realize that even if we go to church every Sunday, it's not a priority for us. Mm-hmm. We're not living it each and every day. They need to see us kind of praying by ourselves also. I mean, we pray with our children, but do they see us praying by ourselves from time to time mm-hmm. in our house? Do they see us reading the Bible? Do they see us like talking about God and how important he is to us? Mm-hmm. And in general, just living our Orthodox Christian faith. And this is critical because kids pick up on everything, and you can't pass a faith that isn't vibrant and real in your heart onto your child. You have to have it vibrant and be living it in your heart for it to pass on to your child.
St. Paul, St. John Chrysostom, they all speak of the home as a little church. So let me ask you this, Melissa. How do we make our homes little churches?
You know, we're so good in this world about just compartmentalizing everything in our lives. This is when I exercise. This is when I go to church. This is when I go to work. And we don't like the areas, you know, mixing up very much. But yeah, that needs to all change with church, because our church needs to come into the home. It needs to be in all areas of our life, into our rhythm. Our daily rhythm is what it needs to be. And, you know, ways we can do that is, you know, we need to have icons in our homes. You know, our children need to see what they see in church. Mm-hmm. They need to see icons of Christ, of the Theotokos, of their patron saints. You know, we need to see them where we enter, where we eat, where we sleep. You know, we need to pray together like we pray in church. You know, we need to pray before meals, you know, bedtime. This needs to be a part of the rhythm of our day, and that's what the church of the home is. You know, we have conversations together, we read the Bible together, and, you know, there's a million ways that we can kind of bring Christ into our midst daily. And that's what's really critical that we do. You know, there's a beautiful book that was written years ago by Father Anthony Kinnaris, Making God Real in the Orthodox Christian Home.
Oh, yes.
And it has a million ways we can bring the church into our home and help start living our faith on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, sharing some of those traditions. This past week, my mother-in-law was visiting, and they needed prosfora for church. So my son and I, you know, who's 4 years old, we got out and, you know, we set up to make the prosfora, and, you know, and he was telling his yaya, well, first we do this, and then we do this, and we have to say our prayers when we're doing it, and you know, we make the list of the people that get prayed for and stuff. And so he's learning how that's a part of our faith in the home.
Sure, that's great. That's the way to do it. That's the only way to do it, frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, Melissa, in the first 3 or 4 years of developing love and attachment, we do that to key figures in our life. At least that's what I've been told. I'm not a scholar here, but I've been told that. But kids shouldn't just bond with parents and grandparents at the time, right?
Right. Well, and just to start with, to talk a little bit about attachment in early childhood, because it's it's essentially falling in love, you know, with your parents or primary caregivers. And, you know, it happens with others than your, with other than your parents, but it's strongest with your parents. And it's not just something, everybody talks, oh, your baby's very attached to you, you're bonded with your baby. It's not just something nice. It's actually something that's vital for that child to develop.
Right. Not a luxury, that's for sure.
No, absolutely not. Right. Because, you know, study after studies have shown that kids that don't have that attachment to a primary caregiver, they fail to thrive, they fail to develop, and some even die. That's how critical having that attachment to another human being is in this world. So when we think about that and we think about spiritual development and what that means, how important is it for our children to attach themselves to God, to realize that He is their loving Father? And again, this is not... this is necessary for spiritual development, for them to grow spiritually, develop spiritually. It doesn't matter if we're giving all this information about the church or teaching our children who the 12 apostles are, you know, or all the information that we teach them, if they haven't fallen in love and attached themselves with God. And that's so incredibly critical. And, you know, it's, how do we do that? Again, we kind of come back to that idea of the modeling to really, really help our children attach to God. We have to attach ourselves to God. And then they feel that love and in our hearts, you know, they feel that from the time that they're babies and they're surrounded by our love of God. Another beautiful quote by Bishop Irenaeus, he says that, you know, if we attach ourselves to the love, a love of God, we found 1,002 ways to pass that on to our children. Mm-hmm. So it starts with us, but it's critical. We can teach all our children all these little things about the church, but if they're not in love with God, it's not going to matter.
Talk with us about teaching our children to pray.
Well, I can't say enough how critical it is. And it starts from the moment they're born. You know, kind of the first stages of prayer is just kind of remembering to pray when we're with them, when we're holding them, when we're feeding them, mm-hmm. rocking them, singing, chanting, repeating hymns. I can remember numerous times, late nights with my baby in my arms, you know, clinging to some of the hymns of the church for strength, you know, as we've all had as parents very late nights. You know, and as they grow, these hymns are kind of become part of their heart, you know, and they start to make them their own and how to pray for people they love and maybe even make them a little photo book of people they love and mm-hmm. say, pray for my Yaya, and then we sing, Lord, have mercy. You know, right. Pray for this person, and they learn how to sing, Lord, have mercy. We just slowly start adding and building onto that and getting them involved and it becoming part of their routine. You know, you read a lot about routine in young children. And it's critical, you know, a routine for bedtime, a routine for mealtime, a routine for this. Well, part of those routines should be prayer. It should be integrated in there for those young children to hear it, to engage in it. And as they grow older, children can start contributing to it. What are you thankful for today? What do you want to thank God for? You know, what did you need God's help with today? Just thinking through that thing. Are there any people out there that we need to remember in our prayers today and help getting kids actively involved in it? You know, and, you know, I know people will say, oh, gosh, you know, kids are so young, they just really don't get it. I actually had a friend who had two children, and one of them was three, and the younger child, the son, was very sick, very seriously ill, and there was a lot going on in their house in dealing with this illness. And I happened to be visiting them, and the little girl was playing over in the corner by herself, the three-year-old, mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I started listening to her, and she was chanting, and she was making up her own words and praying for her little brother,
wow.
all on her own. And I had asked the mother, I said, you know, do you do this regularly with her? And she said, well, you know, she probably hears us praying and stuff, but honestly, things have been so crazy, we haven't done anything, you know, formally with her and stuff. But this little girl knew in her heart, because she had seen it all around her, that that's where you go when things are wrong. Yeah. And so children very much understand prayer and very much need to be praying at a young age.
Well, Melissa, our time is up for today. You and I could talk a long time about this issue, and I'm sure we'll get to some other questions in the future. But thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Father.
Well, you've been listening to another edition of Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. On a related subject here as we close, the Orthodox Center for Family Care, the organization that Melissa is a part of, is conducting a free webinar next Tuesday, January 21st, on how to keep your family and especially your children safe in an ever-changing digital world. The explosion with social media and portable technologies has made safe viewing and listening very difficult, and a world leader in this field will be hosting the webinar, and the best part is it's absolutely free. Just go to our website for the link to the sign-up sheet. It'll be right there on the homepage at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Thanks, as always, to our executive producer, Ann Dankert, and join us again next week at this same time for another edition of Come Receive the Light, and remember to always have faith in what you listen to.